Here we go.
Good afternoon. It's Monday, the 27th of January. 2020. I have to keep thinking about that, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. Your host today, Mike Robinson, myself, Brian Gerrish. I'm still a little bit croaky, possibly. This is a virus, Mike.
Well, indeed. And hasn't the mainstream media hysteria been unbelievable? So this is today's headline. Just before we came on air, coronavirus death toll rockets to 80 with 24 new fatalities reported at the outbreak's epicentre in Wuhan and nearly 400 new cases as experts warn it can spread before symptoms show. So we've got to be extremely afraid, Brian.
Very afraid. I'm just interested in the statistics. We're about to have a look at the Daily Mail's reporting, but 24 new fatalities and China's population 1.4 billion, is it? Or
certainly well over a billion.
Well,
yes.
Over a billion. So that makes us think a bit. Let's have a look at this. This is Friday's Daily Mail. The front page is 9 suspected cases in UK, universities on alert. 20 million lockdown in Chinese cities. Is the killer virus here? And in case you haven't seen enough on the front page, let's have a look. We've got a double page spread here inside, and if one double page spread isn't enough, we've got a second double page spread, and this is all basically telling us that we're going to die, or are we? Let's have a look at how that report broke down. So here's the front page, and we're just adding this because as you read through this disgraceful reporting, the message is very clear. It's killer. It's death. We've got to be very, very afraid because there's something very nasty coming. Can we do anything about it? Well, they do make some suggestions. We'll have a look at this in a bit more detail in a minute. But what can you do to be safe? You've got to use common sense. So you've got a killer virus, but you're going to use common sense, and you're going to wash your hands in hot soapy water. You're going to clean high touch surfaces such as counters, doorknobs and phones. Where did we hear that sort of advice before, Mike?
Oh, thinking back a few months, year or so, Novichok.
I think it was Novichok, wasn't it, where we were going to wash our hands and clothes, of course. Clothes were going to be washed, and that was going to deal with a weapons grade chemical warfare agent. But here, luckily, that hot soapy water is going to work as well.
Now, in fairness, we should say that this is the Daily Mail's advice. This isn't actually Public Health England. They haven't issued any advice yet. And so people are asking in the chat box about baby wipes. There hasn't been any mention of baby wipes just yet.
No. And of course, we've got a change of the head of Public Health in England. The Novichok lady has gone. I think it's a gentleman who's taken over the role.
Yes, Chris Whitty.
Chris, yes. But at the moment, Chris hasn't given us any better advice than make sure you wash your hands and you clean off those doorknobs. So let's have a look at how it worked with the Daily Mail. Well, all this is pretty obvious. We've got the headline there with the young lady. So we've got lots of emotive, disturbing language. We've got the killer virus. We've got 20 million lockdown in China. We're going to be taking no chances. We've got a traveller isolated in an airport quarantine box. That was with a very emotive photograph of it. Looked like a young man locked up in a box. It apparently feels like the end of the world. It's a deadly virus, and it may be, just may be, linked to snakes and bats. So all looking promising. And I thought it was fascinating how they'd picked, was she Chinese or Asian anyway, young lady, to put on the front page, clutching her phone. I hope she wiped it down with hot soapy water. Don't know. But that's how you ramp up the story in order to get it into people's minds.
Can I just say we're not advising anybody to wipe their phones down with hot soapy water. We don't want to be sued for any breakages.
For poor advice.
Yes,
that's true. Well, as you got into the paper, let's have a look at how it panned out. So it got worse. Great pictures there out of China. They must have taken quite some effort to get those pictures. Nice little emotive picture with a family with children. You've got to get children into the horror story. Amid global panic, how many of our 120,000 Chinese students are at risk? Well, it appears from the statistics we're looking at the moment, it's not many, but we've got a bit of information to come on that, I think.
Well, yeah, as of yesterday, a total of 52 UK tests have been concluded, of which 52 were confirmed negative and zero positive. So the Department for Health and Social Care will be publishing updated data on this on the page that I got this from on a daily basis at 2 p.m. until further notice. They said there are no confirmed cases in the UK or of UK citizens abroad, and the risk to the public is low. The government is monitoring the situation closely and will continue to work with the World Health Organization and international community. So their approach is guided by the advice of the Chief Medical Officer, and when a first case in the UK is confirmed, it will be announced as soon as possible by whichever country's Chief Medical Officer happens to be, whichever country it happens to be in, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland or England. And that'll be followed by a statement by England's Chief Medical Officer, who, as we said already, is Professor Chris Whitty.
Right. So at the moment, the risk is low. And although the Daily Mail is hyping it up that we're all going to die and millions of people are going to die, the facts are that the risk is very, very low. And it is low, as we will see in due course. But let's have a look at the second double page spread in the Daily Mail. We've got on the left hand side, is the virus already here? 20 million under a blanket of fear. But of course, that's immediately switched to China. Six cities locked down. We've got a nice central picture, which is I want to use an unpleasant expression, which I'm not allowed to on the UK column, but this is playing with people's minds. We've got a market in China, and the emphasis is that snakes, bats, hedgehogs and even koalas are on sale in the meat market where the virus began.
Well, they have absolutely no evidence for that statement whatsoever, which I guess is why they put it in single quotes. But I'm sorry, that doesn't lie them away with it, frankly.
Not at all, Mike. There's no evidence at all. And if you read their own article, you will see that there's no evidence. But of course, what they're relying on here is that people are going to be busy. They're going to be on the tube going into work. They're going to pick up on the gross pictures and the headlines. And they're supposed to be sucking in that we are all going to die of this flu virus. Notice that we've got lots of pictures of the animals around that central image in case people don't understand what a hedgehog is. We've got to get the little emotive thing. So this, to my mind, is pure propaganda. But on the right-hand side, they've got a question and answer column, and let's see whether we can bring that on screen. So we've got is, what is a coronavirus? So these can trigger respiratory infections from bad colds too. On rare occasions, lethal pneumonia. So this is a sort of flu virus, but it's only on rare occasions that it can lead to lethal pneumonia. They then go on to say, these include SARS, severe acute respiratory syndrome, which killed 774 people in the early 2000s, and MERS, Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, which claimed 850 lives since 2012. So these are not alarming numbers of people dying within the population of China or even the world, Mike. These are tiny numbers of people. So the Daily Mail starting to undermine its own hype. What are the symptoms? Flu-like, maybe mild, a temperature, sore throat, sniffles. But patients may not know they're infected and may go on about their daily business. Just like anybody else who's got flu or a cold here in UK, you don't quite know, you feel a bit iffy, you go out. But what do they say? Well, they go on, what if it worsens? Well, scientists don't really know much about it, they say, but the death rate could rise. How is it transmitted? Saliva, close contact, hugging. So this is all pretty normal for coughs and sneezes. But we then get into a few other things. How contagious is the virus? We don't know. We're still finding out. Most disturbing is, if true, a Chinese report that in one case, 14 healthcare workers were infected by a single patient. Well, flu virus spreads pretty quickly anyway. So let's bring this one up. And how can I best protect myself? Well, here we are. In comes the common sense and basic hygiene. Will a face mask help? Well, they're saying apparently not. So where do we go? Disinfectants, possibly. But where does the article end? We just pop that one back on screen. Thank you, Mike. We've got how long before there is a vaccine.
Uh-huh.
So let's see how this actually pans through as we get a bit deeper into how the Daily Mail put this lot together. So who was the team? Well, the Daily Mail assembled a very big team to produce this massive article. Sophie Borland, the health editor, interesting lady, because it's very difficult to find out anything about her. I did find one photograph. I couldn't see much about her history, although she's been writing for a long time. But Sophie, we presume, led this. We've got a Jim Norton, who's just described as a reporter for the Daily Mail. We've got Josh White. He describes himself as a hack on his Twitter page, so maybe that's true. We've got a Colin Fernandez, who's the Science and Environment Daily Mail. And then we've got a very interesting man we're going to come back to, John Nash, health reporter, Daily Mail. And there's a picture of him on the right-hand side. So let's focus on Mr. Nash and see how the Daily Mail continued. And this is an article that's come out very recently. Should bring it up here. Here we are, Mail Online. From bat to snake to humans, the coronavirus is a real-life sci-fi nightmare, writes health reporter John Nash. Now, of course, don't forget the bat, because that's a key ingredient of any horror story. And he brought the bat into this article. But we're very interested on with this man and what he had to say. So let's have a look at that. He says, picture the scene. A bulldozer is clearing vegetation in dense jungle somewhere in Asia. The machine disturbs a bat feeding in a banana tree, causing it to flee. The bat flies over a pig pen, dropping a piece of the fruit, which is gobbled up by a hungry piglet. The piglet is destined for a restaurant in Macau, where its carcass is prepared for cooking by the chef. Called from the kitchen to meet a customer, he fails to wash his hands and greets the unfortunate woman with a friendly handshake. Now, this is how he begins his article. And let's see how it's spun. And so she becomes patient zero, the first person to be infected with a lethal new virus caused by the spontaneous merging of genes from pig and bat viruses. Do we know that's true, Mike?
No.
Well, we don't. Within weeks, the virus has infected half the world and 25 million people are dead, including Gwyneth Paltrow, the unfortunate patient zero, and Kate Winslet, playing an epidemiologist whose corpse is buried in a mass grave. The US president, meanwhile, has been dispatched to a secret underground bunker. The global pandemic was, of course, the stuff of science fiction, as envisaged in the 2011 film Contagion. So we've got a mix here. Is fiction, films is being mixed in what the truth is. But he goes on to say immediately after this section, yet the deeply worrying events in China suggest that this plot line may be uncomfortably close to the truth. And I'm going to label this fear, hype and fake news. Just remarkable, Mike, that you start off just putting the plot of a film and you are spinning it into the fact that this is what's really happening on the ground. Where does it go? It comes here. Climate change, because he ends by saying climate change too is a factor as it forces some creatures to find and adapt to new habitats, perhaps closer to humans. There are plenty of other new viral candidates waiting in the wings, guts, breath and blood of animals around us, and any one of these infections, along with countless as yet unknown zoonoses, could cause a global disaster beyond the worst nightmares of Hollywood. Our hopes must lie, as ever, in science. In the short term, this means quickly developing vaccines against the latest Wuhan coronavirus and the other viruses that will inevitably follow. So we get to the end of the theatre with what the true agenda is, and that's we're going to back climate change and the drive to compulsory vaccinations. What do you make of it?
I think it's the most egregious piece of propaganda I've heard you discuss, really.
It's mind-blowing, isn't it?
But it's only the alternative media that pushes out fake news, disinformation and propaganda, right?
Well, wrong. this man is amazing. So let's have a little bit of a deeper look at John Nash. And really, this is his own word, so it's nothing to do with us, because the picture that we've been showing comes from this article. And the title was "The Electric Thinking Cap That Makes You Cleverer and Happier." And if you want to know what this is about, well, he says it all. "Although I like to consider myself a reasonably intelligent chap, when it comes to maths, I'm a dunce. At school, I failed the O-level. I'm hardly alone. Numeracy problems affect around 1 in 5. That's 20%. So when I heard of a researcher who could boost people's math skills using an electronic brain stimulator, I had to meet him, which is how I come to find myself in a small, stark lab room at Oxford University with an electrode clipped to my head." This man is frightening, Mike. He is absolutely frightening. And where is this going to take us? Well, what is the real question about coronavirus? And the question is this nature at work, or is this a preventable man-made leak? And we've been getting some very good pointers to research warning that China was delving into these types of viruses in a particular lab, and there were risks that viruses could leak. So we've just put up one of these on screen, but there's been other information to support this. And within this particular article, it says that within the framework of the Sino-French Cooperation Agreement on Emerging Infectious Diseases Prevention and Control, signed in October 2004, China constructed its first BSL-4 lab in 2015 in Wuhan. So this is an amazing coincidence. That's where we're told that this virus outbreak has started. And another section of the report says one of the goals after the 2003 SARS epidemic was to build the BS4 laboratory that meets the national and international standards for, quote, diagnosing, researching and developing antiviral drugs and vaccines, while additionally preserving highly pathogenic BSL-4 agents for future research. So we're just going to ask the question here, is this virus outbreak an accident? Is it a freak of nature? Or have we been witnessing the deliberate live attenuation of a virus? This is producing a weaker virus so that the body will actually accept it instead of rejecting it. And you need attenuated viruses to give it the ability to infect people, so that you can test, develop vaccines. And of course, ultimately, there's going to be big profits. And are we on the right track? Well, I think we are, because we can go to a trusted news source, Reuters, and they're saying that with the Wuhan virus genetic code in hand, scientists begin to work on a vaccine. And this article says that they are rushing. In just 3 months' time, they likely will be testing the first of a number of potential experimental vaccines against the new SARS-like coronavirus that is spreading in China and beyond. And Anthony Fauci here, director of the US National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, says, "I told them you're going to have your baptism of fire, folks." So 3 months from gene sequence to initial human testing will be the fastest the agency has ever gotten such a vaccine off the ground, he said. So they're going flat out, Mike, it's vaccine. And of course, we know with vaccine is coming compulsory vaccination. But we'll come back to the fact of, is this nature at work or is this an accident from within a lab? Of course, the Daily Mail isn't asking those questions.
No. And just to add this section off, just to put a little bit of this into perspective, if we're looking at 80 or 100 people that have died from this so far, then we got to keep this in, put this in this perspective of the flu, because this is from the World Health Organization, up to 650,000 people die of respiratory diseases linked to seasonal flu each year. You know, they are saying that these are based on new figures. Actually, this article was from 2017, but they were new figures at the time. 290,000 to 650,000 deaths. It varies from year to year, of course, based on more recent data from a larger, more diverse group of countries, including lower middle income countries, and exclude deaths from non-respiratory diseases. This year, then, if we look at this from KCBD, 2,900 US flu deaths this season, CDC reports. So this is the sort of level of deaths that we get from flu each year. These are normal levels. Although they are reported in the mainstream press, there's no hype about that. That's generally accepted that, of course, it's normally older people or people with lowered immune systems or already with respiratory problems that are going to be having these types of reactions. So got to keep, just put it in a little bit of perspective. But of course, the financial system, Zero Hedge, showing this little graph, a little bit of tongue in cheek here. From the 20th of January there, the initial panic over China coronavirus case, showing the markets coming down a little bit. Epidemic is contained, according to President Xi, and so the markets rise again. Epidemic not contained as China puts 10 cities under quarantine. The markets come down a little bit again. And then, okay, it's okay, the Fed's got it. So everything rises again. And then today we've got this this large plummet in the markets, well, 2% in the FTSE 100, and similar levels of fall in some of the Asian markets that are actually open at the moment. But of course, it's not uncommon for these types of market moves when anything goes on in the world. So it's also about how it's presented in the media.
Yeah. So we're going to say to our viewers and listeners, challenge everything you read and hear about this, ask the questions, but challenge the so-called mainstream media for what they're actually reporting.
So let's move on from that to some good news, Brian, because the Brexit 50p coin has been, the photographs are out, and here it is. It will say on the back, peace, prosperity and friendship with all nations, 31st January 2020. This is fantastic. There are going to be 3 million of these coins are going to go into banks, post offices and shops from Friday this week, and another 7 million entering circulation later in the year. The furore on social media over this is unbelievable, as lots of people that are Remainers are saying that they're going to boycott these coins and throw them back at staff in the shops if they're handed them and this kind of thing. The reaction is unbelievable. Sajid Javid, apparently, he's being Chancellor of the Exchequer, is very excited about this. He says, leaving the European Union is a turning point in our history, and this coin marks the beginning of a new chapter.
So we're going to have prosperity and friendship with all nations, provided those nations do as we tell them. And if they don't, we're not going to be friends with them. We're probably going to bomb them or rocket them or something.
Well, indeed.
Yeah, I get the general idea.
Yeah, okay. Now, other good news, Keir Starmer, of course, perhaps in the lead of the Labour leadership contest at the moment, he has decided that he doesn't like the monopoly of power in Westminster, and so we've got to break up the House of Commons, well, Parliament and so on. We need to empower people to have a real say in their workplace, in the communities they're part of, and over the public services they use. Apparently, democracy isn't suitable anymore. So the way to do that is to devolve everything to the lowest possible level. Well, of course, what he's really talking about here is citizens' assemblies, which, strangely enough, is what Extinction Rebellion is calling for at the moment. And of course, they're using climate change as the excuse for the creation of these citizens' assemblies. Keir Starmer, should he become leader of the Labour Party, clearly pretty excited at the prospect of a complete change in the way we're governed.
Fascinating, Mike, isn't it? Back in, got a guess now, 2003, 2004, we had the European policy sweeping across UK, which was regional assemblies. We'd had Scotland and Wales broken away from Britain and England divided up into whatever it was, seven regions. And this was the European Union model. The government then tried to force elections. They were going to be elected, so-called elected regional assemblies. This was all European Union policy. We've now left the European Union, but we're seeing a variation of that EU theme of regional government coming in.
Well, absolutely, but taking it to an even lower level. So
city, state,
if we go
community.
Through all that, you know, we think the big society, we think of the cities, the elected mayors and so on, all this devolution process, he is wanting to take it to the lowest possible level. But this is what Tony Blair said he wanted to do, and then David Cameron as well.
And John Prescott, of course, was the man driving those elected regional assemblies at a time when we knew the political charity Common Purpose was doing great work inside the Deputy Prime Minister's office. It's all coming back in one picture.
Absolutely.
Just amazing.
So if you like what the UK Column does and you would like to support us, then please head over to ukcolumn.org/community. And there are various options for helping us out there. Your help would be very much appreciated and much needed. Now, on Friday, we mentioned that Vladimir Putin had suggested that perhaps what was needed to solve some of the world's problems was a five-power summit. This is what he had to say, if you remember. I think an example could and should be set by the founding countries of the United Nations, the five powers that bear special responsibility for the preservation of civilization. And he's talking about the United States, United Kingdom, France, China and Russia. Well, on Friday then, after the news programme, Emmanuel Macron got on board. He said, "Dear Vladimir, I support your proposal to gather us all together and I would like us to achieve that. As we're guarantors of world peace," he said. "I'm not sure that the people that have been protesting in Paris over the weekend and France over the weekend over what he's attempting to do to French pensions at the moment would necessarily agree." The Chinese foreign ministry spokeswoman also said that China would be very interested in getting involved in this because global instability and uncertainty are increasing, while multilateralism and the role of the United Nations are facing clear challenges. People saying, you know, basically the United Nations is not a perfect institution by any means, but it's really the only one we've got. Dmitry Peskov was certainly expressing that view, but he also said that the participation of all countries is essential to pull efforts to find solutions to the problems facing us. We can't solve them alone. At this point, the US and the UK haven't really thrown their hats in the ring or said either way, but we will watch and see whether this summit actually takes place.
Indeed. Well, let's come back to life in UK. One of the things that we've been talking about for some time has been the smart motorways. A lot of that is because over the years we've driven a lot of miles across long Britain's motorways. And of course, the smart motorways just becoming more and more dangerous. Well, interestingly, the bubbles finally burst. This is BBC's report on it, but a lot of the other media outlets covering the story as well. BBC says 38 killed on smart motorways in the last 5 years. This is where the BBC makes me laugh because, gosh, they did a good bit of detective work. They sent a Freedom of Information request, and that's now going to become a Panorama programme. But nevertheless, this is where apparently it started, because the response to that request revealed, amongst other things, that there was 72 near misses over 5 years on a section of the M25. But once it had become a smart motorway and the hard shoulder was removed, the 72 figure went up to 1,485, and a near miss is counted every time there is an accident with the potential to cause injury or ill health. So it was obvious that the statistics were there to show that these so-called smart motorways were in fact very dangerous. And what people need to remember is that Highways England is a private company that just gets a huge wadge of money from the British government to carry on its agenda with almost no oversight whatsoever. So it's pretty phenomenal what's come out in this investigation. So former Minister Mike Penning, who approved the expansion of the smart motorway scheme, said that 38 people have been killed on them in the last 5 years, and that MPs were misled over their safety. And this expression misled appears in a number of different reports over what's happening. So if you mislead somebody over the deaths of people, it would appear more deaths than the coronavirus at the moment, Mike, or pretty nearly. Shouldn't you actually be brought to account in some way?
Well, you would have thought so, but didn't you tell me at the end of last week that the AA, the Automobile Association, had decided that they were no longer going to permit their members of staff to help anybody that was stuck on a smart motorway? In other words, they weren't allowing their staff members to stop on a smart motorway.
Yeah, because they said it's too dangerous for an AA patrolman to stop on a section of smart motorway. That was absolutely correct. But one of the things to watch for is that we're not talking about reinstating the hard shoulder. We're talking about possibly increasing the number of refuge safety bays, that when your car has broken down, you're expected to drive another quarter mile down the road in order to get into the safety bay. That's being smart. They're not talking about bringing the hard shoulder back at the moment. What they are saying is we need more radar so that we can tell when you're broken down. And of course, if you read the reports, what people were saying is they'd broken down in the middle of a very busy motorway. There was no place of refuge for them, and they were making phone calls to the police. And some of the accidents where vehicles ran into stationary vehicles and people were killed, just horrific. Mm. So at the moment, we're not really getting to grips with our roads, but we are getting into the propaganda of viruses overseas.
And indeed, well, we're heading towards live facial recognition now in London. This is another piece of good news. Live facial recognition is a crime-fighting tool, apparently, and it's going to help the Metropolitan Police solve their most serious crimes. So they say that the use of live facial recognition technology will be intelligence-led and deployed to specific locations in London. This will help tackle serious crime, including serious violent crime, gun and knife crime, child sexual exploitation, and help protect the vulnerable. The technology from NEC, they say, provides police officers with an additional tool to assist them in doing what officers has always done, to try to locate and arrest wanted people. This is not a case of technology taking over from traditional policing. This is a system which simply gives police officers a prompt suggesting that person over there might be the person you're looking for. It's always the decision of an officer whether to engage with someone or not. So here is Nick Efgrave, who's the Metropolitan Police Assistant Commissioner, and he said, as a modern police force, I believe we've a duty to use new technologies to keep people safe in London. So this is all about keeping people safe. Now, if you're concerned about this, you don't need to worry, because apparently how it's going to work is that facial recognition system will simply sound an alarm if somebody that's identified by it looks like someone that the police want to speak to. The police will then make a decision about whether to go and speak to that person or not. But if they decide not to speak to that person, they will delete all the data that they've gathered in the course of the surveillance. So you don't need to worry at all, Brian.
Well, on the contrary, I feel worried already because I simply don't believe the police when they say that they will do that. Well, why should I believe the police in this country? I know that some of them are doing a good job, but we know in general the police are simply not doing their job.
Indeed. Well, it doesn't end there. Well, OK, people would say that this is justified, but basically there's £100 million now being spent to put x-ray scanners in 16 prisons. So will this end up on the streets, going into shopping centres and so on? Who knows? There's government saying tough new security measures will be introduced at 16 of the most challenging prisons, a major part of the government's crackdown on crime behind bars. So these are innovative new x-ray body scanners developed specifically for the prison service, and they're going to produce instant images from inside the human body to reveal internally concealed contraband, including drugs, mobile phones and weapons. There you go. That's good news. And in more good news, the government is pushing through the drones legislation. This is the Air Traffic Management and Unmanned Aircraft Bill. It's getting its second reading today, and police will be given the power to land, inspect and seize an unmanned aircraft as a result of this legislation. They'll also get new stop and search powers around airports and prisons to help tackle illegal drone use. And drone users will still be able to obtain permission to fly drones for purposes such as photography and surveying. So that's good news.
And I'm going to say well done to Extinction Rebellion, because, of course, they had a hand in this by their action, their crass action around Heathrow with the drones some months ago. And this is the same Extinction Rebellion that openly declares that it's prepared to get involved in criminal activity. It's been described as an extremist organisation by the former head of SO15, Britain's police anti-terrorism group. And yet, of course, the government is taking no action about Extinction Rebellion at all because it's a government approved extremist organisation.
Yes.
I think we better stop there.
Yeah.
We never know really what's going to come together in the news, but I find it fascinating that today we're solving deaths on motorways, not by having the original safety lane, the hard shoulder that they were built with, because people use common sense and said we need a refuge for cars. We're going to solve the problem by radar surveillance, so they know when you've broken down, so they know when you're about to die. We've got facial recognition coming in, which is going to help the police do their job, except the police are not investigating serious crimes, so they're not doing their job, and the facial recognition is not going to help them. We've got x-ray body scanners. Well, that's going to be interesting. And we've got the drive to vaccinations to protect us against bat origin viruses. Yes, OK, we better stop there. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back at the same time on Wednesday. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.